Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Mr. President, Mr. President, Sir Simon, distinguished guests, first of all, let me, on behalf of this distinguished gathering, thank you, Mr. President, for honoring us and for paying this tribute to our friend Bill Simon. We all know what your responsibilities are, and we're all deeply appreciative. Now, I must say, Mr. President and ladies and gentlemen, that I was brought here under false pretenses. My idea was that I was supposed to have an opportunity to say what I thought about Bill Simon. But then I was told the president has to leave in a reasonable time, and the program was changed. In fact, as I understand the program, for those of you who haven't quite followed it, it has a ecumenical basis. It's a Catholic university, but the program was made by an Israeli. As I understand it, my job is to introduce Justin Dodd. Then Bill Simon will accept an award, which the president will afterwards present to him. So if you can all read from right to left, you will understand perfectly. You will understand perfectly what is going on here. Now, I want to say to the president that when he has to manage his cabinet and other personalities, whenever things get difficult, remember those of your predecessors who had Simon and me to deal with simultaneously. And if I may say this in the presence of Father Healy, we all, everybody in high office occasionally ask for divine inspiration. My critic said that when I got through asking for it, I would then ask the Lord what I could do for him. But I was always convinced of one thing, that if the Lord wanted to address the American people, he would not choose as a vessel somebody who spoke with an accent. Well, Bill Simon does not have an accent. At the end of our governmental career, he told me he was going to write a book called A Time for Truth. And I was absolutely panicked. So I called George Bush, who was then head of the CIA, and asked him whether he couldn't interpose some security objections. And he said, don't worry, this is a book about economics. Anybody knows there's no truth in economics. He said, it's like black magic. So I said, you mean like voodoo? And and he said, you Harvard men really have a turn of phrase. But I have been prohibited from saying anything about Bill Simon for fear that I might recount the occasion when at the height of the energy crisis, he called the Shah of Iran a nut. And when I called him up, he said, you political scientists always get so excited. I'll fix it. He put out a statement saying he was quoted out of context. The poor Shah went to his grave trying to figure out the context in which he could be called a nut. But I see that Dave Abshire is getting restless. So let me introduce Justin Dodd, who mumbled something to me as he was coming in about converts. Justin Dodd is a man of great dedication, man who performs an invaluable role in the so-called kitchen cabinet. He sees to it that no matter what position the president takes, it will be a moderate one among his advisors. I understand that his advice on Social Security was to set the minimum age for the age of 80, provided the recipient can prove that he's an orphan. I turn over the microphone to Justin Dodd.
Thank you very much, Henry. Mr. President, Father Healy, David Abshire, and Bill Simon, and all the rest of you who have joined together with us tonight to honor Bill. Now, Mr. President, Ann Armstrong and I are enormously grateful for your presence here. It wouldn't be the same without you, and we're very grateful to you, sir. Thank you. Eight years ago, an extremely successful man left his very, very lucrative job, uprooted his large family, moved from his comfortable home, and headed straight for the toughest job, or one of the toughest jobs in the world, the Secretary of the Treasury. He did it for only one reason. He cared enormously about his country. Bill Simon, we in this room and an entire nation are grateful to you for what you did. You became part of a cause greater than yourself. And for 4.5 years, you made sacrifices. You advanced the cause that is America. Thanks, Bill. 2 years ago, Bill wrote a book called A Time for Truth. More than 2 million copies of a Reader's Digest condensation were distributed to employees, shareholders, women's clubs, and all other kinds of organizations. It shattered the apathy of those who read it. Now he's written a new book, and it's called A Time for Action. A summary of this book is forthcoming. We hope to get at least 20 million copies of this condensation distributed throughout America. It will dramatically affect the voting of the election 1 year from this November. The book calls for the nation to do more than to talk about its problem. It calls for action. And Mr. President, we thank you enormously for the inspirational message you have written endorsing this book. With your recommendation behind it, it will be a major factor in convincing our nation that this is truly a time for action. We solicit all of your support who are here in distributing this message. It's a powerful message. Tonight, 20 donors have joined together to create a William Simon Chair at the Georgetown Center so that the democratic process shall have an advocate in the classroom. I'm sorry to say, too many universities are afraid to be advocates of free enterprise principles. With the Bill Simon Chair, the Georgetown Center takes the lead in the advocacy of freedom and courage to battle against those who would destroy our democratic heritage. These 20 benefactors have had the wisdom and the courage and the generosity to endow the Simon Chair to the cause of freedom. Each of them are giving $100,000 over the next 5 years for a total of $2 million. This is a dramatic expression of confidence and esteem which these donors hold for Bill and for their country. I would like you to know exactly who made these contributions. Those of us who could not be with us tonight are Steve Bechtel of the Bechtel Company, Walter Ritson, Citicorp, Bob Fleur, Fleur Corporation, Peter Grace, Chairman of the W.R. Grayson Company, Frank Carey, Chairman IBM, Arm & Hammer, Occidental Petroleum, Don Kendall, Chairman of PepsiCo, Bob Dee, Chairman of Smith, Klein & French Corporation, John Alibrandi, President of Whitaker Corporation, and Peter McCullough, Chairman of Xerox. Those who could be with us tonight, and we're glad they're here, and I would appreciate it very much if they would stand until we have presented all of you. Dwayne Andreas, Chairman of Archer Daniel Midland Company. Where are you, Dwayne? All right. T. Wilson, Chairman of the Boeing Company. Thomas Lebrick, President of Chase Manhattan Corporation. John Richmond, Chairman of Darton Craft. And Warren Bass and Holmes Tuttle, who helped so much in putting this whole thing together. Paul Orifice, President of Dow Chemical. John Harbin, Chairman of the Halliburton Company. Solomon Olayan, Chairman of the Olayan Group. Mike Joyce, Executive Director of the Olin Foundation. Harry Gray, Chairman of the United Technologies. And Eddie Childs, Chairman of the Western Company of North America. For Anne and for me and for all the rest of the people involved, we say thank you for your generosity and your devotion, not just to Bill, but to our country. Thank you very much. Bill, Simon, that is, I can't tell you how proud I am to be a part of this occasion. You're a hell of a guy. You're an irrepressible leader. You're fearless. You're tough. You're brilliant. You're selfless. You aren't always the most diplomatic guy in the world. But your greatest interest in life is how best you can serve your country. And Bill, God bless you. I give you the Honorable William Bill Simon. Bill, come up here.
Thank you, Jess. Thank you, I think, Henry. I'm really overwhelmed by this outpouring of affection and friendship from so many people who I admire and respect. And to put it mildly, I'm deeply touched and honored by the presence of President of the United States. Thank you, Mr. President. And as incredible as it will seem to all of you who know me, I'm almost speechless in facing the sentimental implications of this evening. Indeed, there might be a lot of people in this great city that would have paid handsomely to attend this event just to witness this phenomenon. And I'm sure it's a situation that my wife, Carol, as well as all my wonderful children, and no doubt numerous others devoutly wish would occur with greater frequency. I remember being frequently assured during my days in the Treasury that there would be a large and enthusiastic turnout if the time and place were set for my hanging. Well, fortunately, I managed to escape this test of my popularity. But I must admit that there were days in which I felt that a seat in the tumbrel might have been preferable in one respect to a seat at the cabinet table, because at least I would have had a clearer idea of which way I was headed. But it seems to me that you've gathered here tonight in defiance of that old Washington precept, out of office and out of mind. And I attribute your presence to the only surplus with which we managed to emerge from government in 1977. And that is the surplus of fond feeling which developed among those who shared the heat in that attempt to redirect economic policy. So I view this evening as a rededication to the principles and ideals for which we have struggled together, and I'm honored to be among so many stalwarts. You are men and women who have braved the tyranny of fashionable opinion and have known the loneliness of a stand against the prevailing winds. Yes, this is far from assemblage of trendies, and you represent a toughness of spirit and a fortitude that's responsible for the magnificent change that's occurring in this country. I'm told that back in the Kennedy days, Arthur Kroc of the New York Times had an appointment with the president, and he was kept waiting in the anteroom for a long time. When he finally was shown into the Oval Office, Kroc said, "Mr. President, when I arrived here, I was thinking about all of your problems, and I've been waiting so long that I've begun to think only of my own." Well, this is not true today, because President Reagan has not kept us Americans waiting in his haste to address the economic problems that weigh heavily upon us. He has given us more than a program. He has made himself the cutting edge of a revolution in economic policy by eloquently and courageously challenging the illusions that have misled us. Yes, my friends, tonight our spirits are livelier because there's a new breeze blowing across this great country, a fresh air to be inhaled by a country that's been choking on the bureaucratic exhaust fumes for the last 50 years. Indeed, for the first time in my lifetime, we have sent to the White House a man who embodies all of the principles for which so many of us have so long fought. A man who understands the nexus between economic and political liberty, and who knows that this connection is the secret to our productivity and the key to the achievements which have sustained generations of Americans and provided to the world a beacon of hope and of opportunity. And it's my firm conviction that because President Reagan and others like him stood resolute in the face of seemingly overwhelming odds, that we can now witness the vigorous determination of a country digging in its heels to stop the slide toward economic and political ruin. That's why I'm so enthusiastic about the new era that's dawning in America. That's why I'm so enthusiastic about this new chair and what it stands for. Because here at this center for which Dave Abshire and other thoughtful citizens have accumulated so much influence, we have the opportunity to pioneer in post-Keynesian economic research and to explore that delicate, critical balance between economic and political freedoms. We can confront the urgent questions which arise from our need to make people understand the trade-offs that will liberate the productive, innovative genius which is the greatest American legacy and also the key to our future. And in this regard, it's always amused me that it's perceived that the best way to stimulate scholarly activity is to create a chair. Well, that seems to tell us what part of the intellectual equipment of academics needs the strongest support. But seriously, it is, of course, a great honor, and it makes me very proud that my name is going to be attached to a chair whose occupant is going to be engaged in this work. And I must express my deep gratitude to my dear friend, Justin Dart, without whose efforts this chair would never have been created. As all of you know, Justin is a truly remarkable American, a true patriot who has spent so much of his life, so much of his time and effort over so many years to bring about a return to sanity in our great country. And to those of you who succumbed to the always gentle coercion and subtle prodding by Jess regarding the endowment of the William E. Simon Chair, my heartfelt thanks. But let me emphasize that this chair does not only stand for what Bill Simon believes and fights for, but for each and every one of us, and especially President Reagan, Justin Dart, and so many of you here in this room who for so many years have fought for a return to the principles and ideals that gave this country the greatest prosperity and the highest standard of living, and most importantly, the greatest individual freedom ever known in the history of mankind. So to those who have worked so hard and through your efforts and your contributions made this occasion possible, I extend my deepest appreciation. Your kindness and the warmth of your friendship will never be forgotten. Ladies and gentlemen, we truly have a new beginning, a historic opportunity. The President has given us high hopes, and we must give him our commitment to back his difficult choices and to assist him in confronting his critics. And if we act wisely and courageously, we can reverse the trend of our affairs and emulate our forefathers in turning over to our children and our children's children a country that's more productive, a country that's more prosperous. Yes, a country that's stronger and better economically, financially, morally, and spiritually than the one we inherited. Thank you. Now, it is my unique high honor and great privilege to introduce the President of the United States.
Thank you very much. Father Healy, our chairman, our guest of honor, Bill Simon, and you ladies and gentlemen who are here, and our master of ceremonies, Henry, I think it's only fair to me for me to explain. I have not spent the last several weeks pushing pins into a Tip O'Neill doll. I'm not dressed as the rest of you are this evening. As they told me, since I couldn't have dinner here, I shouldn't put on the black tie. But I am the one who is honored to be here to participate in this event tonight. I could spend more than just a few minutes this evening discussing my personal debt of gratitude to Bill Simon, but I think the critical role he played in last year's election campaign and the attention that was paid his personal counsel are well known. I could also speak at length of Bill Simon's career in government. His reputation as a crisis manager par excellence was first earned during the brilliant handling of the 1974 energy crisis. It was Bill's competence and his psychologically correct moment, his courageous decisions that broke the back of the gas shortage. His subsequent leadership as the director of our energy policy laid the groundwork for many of the steps that we're taking today to make America energy self-sufficient. As Secretary of the Treasury, Bill's development and revision of international monetary policy, his brilliant diplomatic initiatives, especially in negotiating the new economic agreements in the Middle East, all of these accomplishments are testimony to his superb mind and spirit. He has rightfully earned his reputation as one of the most skilled public officials to ever serve the people of the United States. But beyond his political skills and his success in the public and private sector, Bill Simon's greatest accomplishment may be his unabashed advocacy of the principles of American government and the ideals of human freedom. Recently, I had occasion to note that last year's political victory was not so much the victory of politics and policies as it was the victory of ideas, not so much a victory for any one man or party as it was a victory for a set of principles. A few years ago, in New York, Bill Simon gave a speech in which he reflected on those principles. He said, "We have to return to the fundamental principles and ideals, and the principles will be every bit as true to us as we are true to them. A return to the work ethic, family discipline, fiscal responsibility, rejection of the notion that only government holds the keys to the economic kingdom. Return to people who believed in a strong America and an almighty God, putting our faith in the people who are builders and creators instead of an all-powerful federal government. A return to equality of opportunity, individual initiative, and individual responsibility, and all of this in the framework of a free marketplace that built this beautiful country." Well, I think that's a pretty apt summation of what Bill Simon stands for. There are things that really America stands for, and surely no one has done more than Bill Simon to defend, advocate, develop, and explain those ideas and principles. That's why it's altogether appropriate that this generous gift, a chair of learning, be given in Bill Simon's name. He is a man of intellect and learning who has used those powers in the service of human freedom and civilization. And if I might inject something else, it was not a part of this evening. During the campaign, I, at one point, talking to Just Dart, said to him that I had a dream of maybe one day, without the press swarming around or without any attention being paid to it or public announcement, what if we could get in one room representatives of business and industry in America, representatives of the top level of organized labor, and representatives of government, and then, with no one there to listen except ourselves, say to each other, all right, let's lay it all out on the table. Let's find out. What can each one of us do? What can we contribute? What can we remove as a block to increase productivity in this country to where it should be and where it has been in order to provide work for those who want work and to restore our place competitively in the international market? And from that, having said it to Justin Dart, it's probably a dream that's going to come true, because I'm going to take this occasion this evening to announce that the chairman of the Productivity Commission is going to be Bill Simon. Bill, I began by saying I owe you a personal debt of gratitude, but so does every American, for your outspoken advocacy of the great civilized ideas and for your defense of the principles that are the source of our country's greatness. And again, I say I'm privileged and honored to be, even in a small way, a part of this ceremony here tonight. I didn't know when I came in whether I was going to be the latest after-lunch speaker or the earliest after-dinner speaker, but I was preceded by others and will be followed by others, and again, I'm pleased to be here, and Bill, congratulations, and no one deserves it more.
Father Healy, the president of Georgetown, will make a comment and give the blessing. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the first item of my business this evening is to say thank you to Bill for letting people organize a chair around him. He's a former trustee, and this is the most trustee-like action possible. Secondly, to Mr. Dart and to Ambassador Armstrong, my gracious dinner companion this evening, for organizing it, and finally to all of you who, present and absent, who contributed this munificent gift. As you know, universities rather specialize in immortality, and a great many people feel that the immortality is in bricks and mortar. I inhabited a building named Healy, and it honors a president 100 years ago of Georgetown University whose mother was a black slave. As long as the stone lasts, that name will last. But universities have another, more specific, and much richer kind of immortality. And that's the immortality of the human exchange that goes on between the young who come to us and the old, who have infinite confidence in the species and total distrust of any individual. I hope that 100 years from now, there will be students learning and faculty teaching, and that much more magnificent action, which is faculty learning, on the basis of your gift tonight, long after all of us are very solidly planted. And I'd like to say thanks not only for the university in its reality now, but for the university of the future, which will benefit from your kindness, your generosity, and your faith. I hope that then as now, Georgetown will be doing, as it has for 200 years, the best it can to persuade a bunch of young Americans to take the Athenian oath to leave this republic better, richer, and more beautiful than it was given to them. From all of us at Georgetown, many, many thanks for your gift. And now if... And now if you stay seated, the next part of the program, David is egging me on, the next part of the program is that I should offer a benediction for tonight. If you please all stay seated. Lord God Almighty, we give you thanks for this occasion which brings us together, for the generous men and women who made it possible, for the distinguished public servant and American citizen in whose honor it is named. We give you thanks also, Lord, that the President is well and able to be with us. To those who are hungry this night, give food. To those who are thirsty, give drink. And to those of us who, through no spectacular merits of our own, need neither of these good things, give now and forever a hunger and thirst for justice. Amen.
I see that Bill Simon isn't paying the slightest attention to me, as always. He's never gotten over the fact that he was number two in the cabinet. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before I'm a man that's very conscious of my turf, and I want to express the extreme resentment I feel that somebody announced the eyeglasses and the bag that was lost. I have my own prerogatives, and I make the announcements here tonight. Now, it is it's my privilege now to introduce the distinguished members of the cabinet who are here. I've been reading all these stories of in the newspapers, and I was up there while doing cocktails, and I eavesdropped on as many conversations as I could to get the current of opinion and who was up, and you know. So I think everybody's getting along just fine. I heard Ed Meese say to the Secretary of State, said why don't we meet at the White House mess tomorrow? The Secretary of State said, why do we always have to meet in your office? Richard Allen is giving some reassurance. Secretary of State said, I'm always right behind you. And I heard Al mumble, that's the most frightening thing I've heard all evening. Members of the cabinet amicably assembled here. No one except Bill Simon could have managed to produce such a turnout except the President. So if I could ask each of them to stand as I call their name, Secretary of State, Treasury who has managed to do without my advice on economics and comprehensively to me. The Attorney General. Counselor to the President at Mays. Director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Bill Casey. The Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs, Richard Allen. The Assistant to the President for Communications, David Gergen. Chairman of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve Bank, Paul Volcker. Charles Zwick, Director of International Communications Agency. Angela Buchanan, Treasurer of the United States. Pendleton James, Special Assistant to the President. And Maya Rashish, Undersecretary of State for Economic Affairs. Now, I'd like to point out that the members of the whoever prepared that list for me put Senator John Tower among the members of the cabinet. Senator John Tower, Chairman of the Armed Services. Now, we also have distinguished representatives of the diplomatic community here. Father Tim Healy will know that in the 16th century, scholars said that the first diplomats were angels as emissaries between heaven and earth. In my experience in government, have found that the standards have not been kept up quite from that period. But I'm sure in the new administration that has all improved. And I'd like to introduce the Ambassador Hedeman from Norway, Ambassador Ambassador Peter Hermes from the Federal Republic of Germany, Ambassador Francois de la Poulet from France, Ambassador Raoul Schumacher from Belgium, and Ambassador Okawara from Japan. In addition, there are several tables of Simon family, or so it seems here, whose name I cannot possibly remember. So will all the Simon children or anybody who is slightly related to the Simon kindly get up? And of course, Carol Simon. Mr. and Mrs. Martin J. White, who's Bill Simon's sister and brother-in-law. Now, for me, it's always a special pleasure to introduce representative natives of the state of Texas. a part of the country I love to visit because they think there that I'm talking with a Harvard accent. Anne Armstrong was ambassador to Great Britain, co-chairman of the Reagan-Bush campaign. She's chairman of the CSIS advisory board and a great lady.
Talk about the natives, but Henry, you are a great man. But everybody has been so introduced, and you know, it was like the greatest gathering in the world tonight. Nobody sat in their seat for more than 15 minutes. There were so many friends that they wanted to see that they got up and wandered and I think talked about important things and seemed to have a little fun too. But Henry, I did very much appreciate that introduction, as I do everything you have done to help me in my public life. And Nancy's here. I won't talk about the other life, but I so appreciate it that I'm going to break a confidence, because about a month ago, Henry and I, we really didn't do much. Justin Dart did everything, and Bill Simon was the thing that pulled it together. But Henry and I were talking, and Henry made me promise in his modest way that I should not tell anybody that he, too, had been offered a chair. Almost as prestigious as the William E. Simon chair. But he had turned it down. Later, I discovered there had been a small problem. Henry wanted a throne. I can only say something like that because Henry tells the most immodest jokes on himself. I'm glad to see everybody here tonight. I'm particularly glad to see not only Bill Simon's wife, but one of the finest women I know, his wife Carol, I'm proud to call my friend. And there are 7 children here tonight at this great round table. I would say that obviously in all areas of import, Bill Simon is an extraordinarily dedicated and effective supply sider. And I have to say something about my chairman that the only thing I contributed to the success of this evening was having the good sense to call Justin Dart and plead. Well, that's a wrong verb, because when it came to Bill Simon, there wasn't any pleading necessary. And when he agreed to raise this endowment, it was done. And it was done with joy. It was done with enthusiasm. And one of the few times when people were happy to give money, because the cause was right, the man was right. Now, foreign policy questions often are discussed in terms of realism and idealism. I think it's not surprising at all, therefore, that such sharp discussion took place about tonight. For the idealists say that the marvelous endowment that's been raised is a personal tribute to Bill Simon, to the respect he commands throughout the country. And on the other hand, the realists say that the endowment is a tribute to the outstanding fundraising ability of Justin Dart. In the great tradition of courageous foreign policy analysts, I say unequivocally that I agree with both. All of us are aware that this is a time of new beginnings. I can't think of a more graphic representation of it than the president honoring us, honoring Bill, by being here tonight. He is the one that is making it happen. And this is also a time of new beginnings for CSIS and Georgetown University. I want to tell you a little bit about what's going on at CSIS, at the center. I don't think I'm presuming on you because so many of you are interested in it. And I think also it fits right in. I think we are providing the proper great hall for where the Simon chair will sit. This, not surprisingly, since Bill Simon, Justin Dart, don't make ripples, they make tidal waves. This chair tonight is, in our estimation, the first, and we couldn't start with a better one, the first of six endowed chairs that we expect to establish this year and next year, which will be the 20th anniversary of the center's founding. We plan to establish a chair in energy to be named after a former member of our center's advisory board, the late Senator Dewey Bartlett. For this, the Noble Foundation has already given us a major challenge grant. This fall, we will announce the William Scholl Chair in International Business and also a Japan Chair. In addition, we seek to establish a chair in contemporary history named after another former member of the board, the late Senator Hubert Humphrey, and a chair in strategy to be named after this center's founding strategist, Admiral Arleigh Burke. I say so too. You'll notice that these chairs relate to people, for it is people with ideas that have made the center a talent bank for governance as well as research. National Security Advisor Dick Allen, Heritage Foundation President Ed Fulner, Youth for Understanding President John Richardson, are all alumni of CSIS, as are Assistant Secretary of State Chet Crocker, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury Craig Roberts, and Ambassador to Saudi Arabia Bob Newman. Bill Smith is a member of the advisory board, and Al Haig was a vice chairman of the board. During the recent transition of the government, center people on loan were involved with 27 departments and agencies, and our chairman, Dave Abshire, was responsible for overseeing the national security cluster, and Wayne Berman coordinated the resources group. But we cannot, and we do not, intend to rest on our laurels. Let me quickly outline Center's research agenda. At present, its agenda includes such critical issues for the 80s as energy and national security, maritime and alliance strategies, terrorism and crises management, and I would note that ABC's 2020 program will soon broadcast a center crises management program. International communications policy, nuclear energy's future, U.S. productivity, which Justin told us tonight, Bill Simon, will find time to give major attention to. A study of possible impacts of internal Soviet problems on external Soviet policies, made possible by a grant from the F.H. Prince Trust, and a study of contingencies of the 80s. I will chair this, what Tom Moore called the What If group. We'll look at a range of scenarios and possible surprises in the international scene. We will use numerous members of the center's staff and, of course, particularly rely on Tom Moore. Father Healy, Tim, let me remind this audience that CSIS will continue its policy studies in fields of such intense interest to you: cultural affairs, religion, and human rights. We are proud of the center's lead under our executive board chairman, Leo Chern, in these areas. This research agenda is buttressed by programs that I believe put CSIS in an unprecedented position of consultation and concept building with the Congress. Under the chairmanship of Senator Sam Nunn, we have approached the more than 20 members of Congress of our advisory board to head a series of study groups to address the mid- and long-range issues before our nation. As is our practice, we will draw executive branch, corporate, and academic leaders into these discussions. Thus, the center plans to stimulate the right questions and set the groundwork for broadly acceptable solutions. Now, where does this new Simon Chair in Political Economy fit into this Center for Strategic and International Studies? Well, it goes back quite a while. Some 19 years ago, when Dave Abshire and Dick Allen planned the Center's first conference on national security, its theme, way ahead of its time, was the strategic significance of economic strength in national security. Combining the geopolitical analysis of Kissinger, Schlesinger, and Kahn with the economic analysis of Wiedenbaum, Eckstein, Ture, and Campbell. Over the years, Dick Scaife and his associates have demonstrated great foresight by encouraging the center to pursue this combination of geopolitical and economic strategy. And now tonight, the center institutionalizes this through the Simon Chair. Bill, you have given this university leadership as a director, as a member of the center's board, and as a member of the International Business Counselors. We are moved by your principles and faith, and we admire the intellectual achievement of your books. On behalf of the center's advisory board, its members of Congress, its leaders of industry and labor, its thinkers and doers, of everybody here tonight, of the literally hundreds of thousands of people across this country who have been touched by your ideas and given you hope for the future of our country, I salute you and challenge everyone in this room to face the future with the excellence, the dedication, with the grit, with the zest that you have demonstrated throughout your life.
According to the program, I get another crack at Justin Dodd. I asked him before what he was going to do for his summer reading. He said he was going to read the book Wealth and Poverty, of which he liked particularly the first half. think all of us here are grateful to Justin for having brought us together in tribute to a man that we admire and love. And it isn't only a tribute to Justin's fundraising ability. It's a tribute to his dedication, to his faith, and to his loyalty to his friends. Justin.
Henry, I noticed with great interest that you remembered who came first in the cabinet, and I congratulate you on that. I think the most important thing about what's happening this evening is the return of Bill Simon to an important facet of service for his country. Our president, who has given us so much spirit, so much hope, so much confidence in restoring the vitality of our country, has repeatedly said that there is no way that we can give more than the total production of our economy. And that is certainly true. We can't give more to the disadvantaged, the sick, to the causes that we would all like to give to. We can't give more than the sum total of the productivity of our nation. And this is what the president is dedicated to, and this is what he has put his finger on Bill Simon to do for our country. And if we do that, then everyone in our country, at all levels, will be better advantaged. Now, Ann, would you come back up here a minute? You're my partner and co-chairman. I would like to say that in all too few instances like this, do we pay adequate attention to the people who have contributed so much to this cause and to this wonderful chair. So at this particular time, I would like to call on you folks who are here to come here and have a little token of our appreciation for what you have done so that this will not be just a scrap of paper in your memory book. And I start with Dwayne Andreas. Dwayne, please. Front and center. Here. Thank you, Dwayne.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dwayne.
T. Wilson. We hope this will remind you of the very nice thing you've done. Tom Leverkew. Tom, thank you. John Richmond. He's my boss and my partner. I have to be nice to him. Thank you, John. Paul Orifas. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much.
John Harbin. Thank you, John. I don't get one of those. Ralph Pfeiffer, representing Frank Carey of IBM. Thank you very much. William McChesney, representing Dr. Armin Hammer of Occidental. Joyce. Where's Michael?
Here he comes.
Oh, here it is. This is the Olin Foundation.
I wish you would say something about John Olin, who, because of his age and health, can't be here. He's 89 years old.
Michael Joyce suggests, and I gladly comply, that I mention that the benefactor here is John Olin, who is a touch on the old side, a touch on the infirm side, but very firm in all of his dedication to our country. Thank you. Harry Gray. Thank you, Eddie. He is the voice of America through San Antonio, Texas. Now, we have a few additional presentos to make, and the first one is made to my partner. The next, Carol and Bill Simon, please.
You bet. I won't kiss you.
Oh, thank you. Henry Kissinger. Thank you, Henry. Father Timothy Healy. And David Abshire. Anne and for me, again, how much we appreciate not only your generosity, but your enthusiasm and your kindness and your affection, which you have expressed for our great compatriot and American, Bill Simon. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Dr. Craig Roberts, about whom at least three members of the center have said, I absolutely must say that Craig represents a new generation of economists. I have somewhat resented that because Bill used to say about me when we were in office together, that my knowledge of economics was one of the best arguments against universal suffrage he had ever seen, which reflected the fact that Bill did not recognize a man who was ahead of his time. I was always an avid supporter of supply-side economics, strongly believed in it before I knew what it was. And I'm practicing it now with great dedication. Dr. Roberts is one of the principal architects of the original Kamprad supply-side economic legislative package, and I reluctantly yield the podium to him at this moment.
Thanks very much, Henry, for an introduction. It will get me the attention of this very distinguished audience. While I talk for a few minutes about a person who's very important and very special. Bill Simon has many fine qualities, but there are two things about him that I find especially admirable. One is that you always know where he stands, and the other is that it's usually in the right place, and just as often he's the first one to be in the right place. 15 months ago, the prospects for the country did not look as promising as they do now. But Bill Simon knew what was needed to turn things around. In a speech before a Harvard audience on the 16th of April, 1980, he set out the elements of a comprehensive economic program, quote, out of which will come non-inflationary economic growth, a sound dollar, and a prosperous, forward-looking people. One element in the Simon prescription is a balanced budget, which, to quote from the speech, will keep the government's hand out of our scarce private savings. Another element is control over spending to, quote, stop the government from balancing its budget by raising taxes. Another element is, quote, a reduction in the rate of taxation on income from all sources. This, Bill said, will stop people from being penalized as a result of their own hard work and their own success. There is no economic or moral justification, he said, for a tax system that acts as a brake on the growth of national income. Yet another element, quote, is a money supply rule that will match the growth of money with the growth of goods and services. The fifth and last element of the Simon prescription is control over government regulation. You will all recognize in the Simon prescription the elements of the Reagan administration's economic policy. Of course, without the election of Ronald Reagan and his agenda, and without the help of many other able and determined people, many of whom are in this room, we would not have the opportunity to take decisive action to restore the economy. At the same time, without the groundwork laid by courageous men like Bill Simon in articulating a policy that goes against the Washington grain, we might still be debating what to do with our opportunity. Back in 1975, when Jack Kemp and I began our efforts to work out the political economy of the supply-side approach, we turned to Bill Simon. Judging from Bill's enthusiastic support, at a time when many others were skeptical, I would say he was thinking about the issue before we were. And over the years, he helped to keep it on track. As I said, Bill is often the first one to be in the right place. In addition to the many benefits to the economy, the new economic program that Bill outlined would give the government something it lacks, and that is control over itself. With government restrained, said Bill, we can look forward confidently and optimistically to a reemergence of the American century. The United States, Bill reminded his audience, and I quote from his speech, is the main repository of the achievements over the centuries that have produced the institutions and values of a free society. However, in recent years, we have suffered a bad case of self-denunciation and self-inflicted instability. In contrast, he noted, millions of aliens have been quietly affirming America. People don't flee from the United States, Bill said. They flee to her. So, he concluded, with less reticence about our own worthiness, with perspective, courage, and leadership, we can get off the defensive and regain the leadership role that is essential to the continuation of liberty in the world. And liberty, ladies and gentlemen, is the bottom line of Bill Simon's approach to economics. Henry?
Our last speaker is one of the great confidence men that I have met. Dave Abshire manages to come into my office speaking in strange accents, very insistently. I know I don't understand exactly what he's saying, but I know he's terribly put upon. And as I wipe away my tears, I realize that I have just committed myself to 10 more engagements. But Dave Abshire is also a man who shows what can be achieved with dedication and a great idea. He has brought the center to its present eminence and to its present national importance. And he's done it with his persistence and with his ability, but above all, with his idealism. Dave Abshire.
Thank you very much, Henry. Before I read the charter of the William E. Simon Chair, I simply want to express the enormous gratitude of the staff of the Center for Strategic and International Studies to Bill Simon, to Justin Dart, to Ann Armstrong, to Henry Kissinger for making this magnificent occasion possible. The charter of the William E. Simon Chair. A William E. Simon Chair in Political Economy is to be established and maintained in perpetuity at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, Georgetown University. The purpose of this chair is to advance the knowledge of fundamental bonds between political liberty and economic freedom. The chair reflects the unique personal accomplishments of the individual for whom it is named, and the values of the society that have made these achievements possible. It is the embodiment of private initiative and skill in economic activity and of high public service to the nation. It is predicated upon the experience and belief of its donors that the free individual is the best arbiter and guarantor of ethical values, material benefits, and political necessities of this society, and that fair competition and free association are far better stewards of the people's well-being than regulations and conformity imposed by the government. The resources of the chair will stimulate deeper study and understanding of the principles that link economic achievement and political freedom, which have created in this country levels of prosperity and opportunity unequaled in human history. The resources of the chair will also encourage the transfer of these fundamental principles throughout society and from one generation to the next. And finally, these resources are dedicated to preserving the principles of strict personal ethics, the free market of goods and ideas, and above all, the practice of liberty. The occupant of the chair will, in his or her work and person, exemplify the highest ideals of individual freedom as they have existed in this open and civilized society built upon sound principles of free enterprise and is practiced in the life and works of William E. Simon. And now, Bill, we've talked so much about this chair, I want you to come up and sit in it and see what it feels like. Tim, would you please bring him up? Now, we've worked it out. Since you can't be the occupant, at least you're going to be able to keep this version of it in your study.
Society who exemplify these qualities the way Bill Simon does. It was one of my greatest privileges to be able to serve with him, and one of my badges of honor that I count him as a friend. The evening is adjourned.